In a few minutes, America's new industrial policy, putting President Trump and Karl Marx in the same sentence. For Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. With a signature, President Trump has ended U.S. participation in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Companies and many economists like the TPP, but the 12-country trade and intellectual property deal had faced opposition from many quarters on the right and the left of the political spectrum. The Trump administration wants to move to bilaterals, agreements between the U.S. and individual countries. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look.
President Trump did away with one of the Obama administration's top priorities with a stroke of a pen in his signing ceremony. But it'll take a lot longer to replace the TPP with individual trade agreements. And there's a debate over whether those will be better deals for the U.S. Washington trade lawyer Andy Scheuer says maybe.
Where it's one-to-one, you feel that you can really push the other side, and you don't have that awkward dynamic of having other participants who might actually undermine your position.
But Duke University law professor Rachel Brewster says actually, big trade agreements can put pressure on countries because they don't want to be left out.
States are willing to really stretch and go further when they know they're part of a pact.
Both Brewster and Scheuer say foreign politicians could face their own political pressures to be tougher in their trade negotiations with the U.S. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Let's quickly do the numbers. The FTSE index in London is up 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up slightly, 15 points for the Dow future. Some changes now to federally backed home loans. President Trump has blocked a planned cut in the cost of mortgage insurance for Federal Housing Administration loans. This could cost some new homeowners hundreds of dollars a year, but the idea is to reduce the risk of loans going bad. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has more.
Trump's team talks broadly about big spending cuts, raising fears the axe will strike housing programs. Carol Galante was FHA commissioner under President Obama.
I am concerned that there will be just a continued strangulation of the budget, and that is going to have a big impact on renters who get any kind of assistance.
No small matter with prices on the rise in many communities. One reason is basic economics. Supply is low. The Urban Institute calculates a shortfall of more than 400,000 housing units nationwide. Lori Goodman is co-director of the Housing Finance Policy Center there.
We're simply not building enough housing.
Some of that is because of local zoning, which is not something a president, even one with a real estate background, can do that much about. But Goodman thinks the administration may try, perhaps using federal transportation funding as an incentive to relax zoning.
That would make a big difference at the margin to try to increase the supply of housing.
Trump actually hasn't said that much about housing policy, so there may be some surprises in store. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
With President Trump set to meet today with senior officials from the car and truck industry, some see a teachable moment about the president's approach to companies in general and his quest to get jobs for Americans. Mark Blythe is a professor of political economy at Brown University's Watson Institute, who says Mr. Trump is, let's let the professor say it, that President Trump
is a Marxist.
A Marxist. Oh, really? One of the economists I talk to quite frequently said President Trump believes in the invisible hand, but that he believes it's his.
That's cute. I like it. I prefer to think of him as channeling some of the Marxists from the 1970s. So let me explain what I mean by this. It's individually rational for any firm to, for example, move jobs abroad, because if you do, you make more money. That creates a competitive dynamic where every other firm does it, and collectively, what's individually rational becomes collectively disastrous. The last time capitalism got into trouble in the 1970s, a bunch of Marxist theorists started to think about capitalism in this way. And if you think about the border tax arrangements that possibly are coming through, it is essentially trying to, in some sense, solve that collective action for capital.
Now, you may see a delicious irony here, but maybe what this country does need is a little bit of top-down industrial policy, because there are some problems. People on the left and on the right agree the U.S. economy is not serving as many people as it should.
Oh, that's absolutely the case. I mean, and one only needs to look at how much debt we've piled up, not public debt, but private debt. And we can pretend that everything's fine and we're back to full employment, etc., and wages are growing. But let's put this into perspective. Wages have been growing for three quarters. They've been pretty stagnant for about 25 years. So let's not get too excited. And what we're seeing here is a reaction against the system that many people genuinely think isn't working.
It's interesting. President Obama had an industrial policy. He put federal dollars into, for instance, the alternative energy sector. He tried to promote robotics and advanced manufacturing and so forth. But one couldn't imagine a Democrat, would you say, going as far as Mr. Trump has in terms of trying to pull the strings of the economy.
Well, you can always invoke the only Nixon can go to China rule on this one. So let's go back to the notion that what Trump's trying to do is get at this collective action problem for capital by reshoring businesses, giving them incentives to stay at home. We've seen this before. It was in the 1930s, and it was called the National Industrial Recovery Act. Because what this leads to, if you follow it through, is very big corporations, a kind of oligopolistic structure. And that type of big, strong, cartelized structure seems to be the type of economy that Trump and the people around him want to build. And that's definitely an industrial policy. Whether it's a feasible one's a different question. It didn't work in the 30s, and no reason why it should work now.
Referring here to the early 30s, not to be confused with the big government spending version of Roosevelt's New Deal, which came later. I get it. Mark Blythe is a professor of political economy at Brown University. Professor, thank you. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Ben Tolliday. I am David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.